chapter. Once again, Lord Krishna is giving us an assurance. He is giving us a guarantee of our success in spiritual life. Now in all these sessions on Wednesday, we have come across many shlokas which give us a similar assurance. All through the whole Bhagavad Gita we find many shlokas which reassure us that once you take to Krishna consciousness, success will be yours. It is only a matter of time, but you will eventually be successful. So, can we mention some of those shlokas if you remember? The most important shloka of them all, which is very reassuring, is Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshayishyami Ma Shuchaha. O Arjuna, abandon all varieties of religion, simply surrender to me, and I will free you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So the word Ma Shuchaha, or do not fear, is very important, because it tells us Krishna knows that we are going to worry. What will happen if I leave everything? What will happen if I abandon all my other dharmas and if I surrender to Lord Krishna? Krishna says, don't worry, don't fear. Ma Shuchaha. Any other shlokas where Krishna is giving us the assurance? Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paripasate tesham mityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. We did that shloka a couple of Wednesdays back. So what is the reassurance that Lord Krishna is giving us in that verse? He will preserve what we have and carry what we lack. He will supply us what we lack. Another doubt we may have when coming to Krishna is that what will happen about my daily livelihood? What will happen about my friends? What will happen about this and that? So many worries. Krishna says, don't worry. Whatever you lack, I will provide. And whatever you have, I will protect. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. And you remember that wonderful story of the devotee in South India who didn't have faith that Lord Krishna will personally protect, and he cut out that yoga kshema vahamyaham. And actually Lord Krishna personally came and protected. So any other shlokas in which we are assured of success? Last time's verse, Neha bhikramanashosti pratyavayo navidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. That even a little bit of endeavor on the spiritual path gives us tremendous advancement, frees us from all types of danger. And this is the assurance that it will never be destroyed. Whatever you have done in spiritual life, in Krishna consciousness in this life, will always be preserved even after death. Any other shlokas? Well, yes. Krishna says, we will do that at a later stage, that verse, but whatever among the verses that we have covered so far. So these are the important shlokas, and last time also we mentioned a couple of other important shlokas in which Lord Krishna says that one who does good, or one who comes to me, evil will never overcome him. Eventually he will always be successful. And even if he fails, if he is a yoga bhrashta, then he may take birth in the heavenly planets, but then again he will be reborn in the family of a brahmana or a mercantile family, and then he will continue his Krishna consciousness. Or if he has been an advanced yoga bhrashta, then he will take birth directly in the family of transcendentalists or devotees, and in this way he will be able to continue very easily on his path of Krishna consciousness. So we can see that right through the different chapters of the Gita, this assurance of Lord Krishna is coming time and time and time again, because Lord Krishna knows that in this material world, we are all insecure, we are all fearful of doing anything. So Krishna time and again has to remind us with different shlokas, don't worry, just come to me, don't worry, come to me, time and again. And here also in the 9th chapter, Lord Krishna is saying the same thing. One very common fear we may have is that while I am executing devotional service, what happens if I get deviated from the path? We saw the answer Krishna gave in the 6th chapter. We saw that last time. Now again in the 9th chapter, the answer is given to that question also. When Lord Krishna says that even if one commits the most abominable actions, if one is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated. Now this verse is important But it is even more important to understand it very clearly, because it is liable to be misunderstood. So, every word must be clearly understood. This word, suduracharo, achar means conduct or behavior. Durachar means bad behavior or bad conduct. And suduracharo means even more bad conduct and bad behavior. So Lord Krishna is saying, apiche suduracharo, in spite of, or although there is bad, extremely bad conduct, if one is bhajate mam ananya bhak, then one is sadhu. That is what Lord Krishna says. So the important thing is, bhajate mam ananya bhak. Bhajate means to become his devotee, to worship Krishna. In what way? Ananya bhak. Ananya bhak means without deviation, with one pointed attention. If that is our kind of devotional service, our bhakti, unflinching, then Lord Krishna says, even somehow or the other, if you commit some abominable actions, then such a person is to be considered sadhur eva samantavyaha. So Lord Krishna is giving us a guarantee, you must consider such a person to be saintly. Why? Because samyag vyavasito hisaha. Vyavasito means to be situated. Samyag means rightly. Because he is rightly situated, so such a person must be considered a sadhu, even if he has committed some abominable action. So what is the catch here? What is the catch? Huh? No. What is the crucial point here in this verse? No? Yes? Properly situated. So what does properly situated mean? Bhajate mam ananya bhak. This is the most important point of this verse. Only if one is always engaged unflinchingly in the devotional service of Krishna, and then by past conditioning, somehow or the other, accidentally one commits a mistake, then one still is to be considered sadhu. You see, we are all coming to Krishna consciousness in this life after many, many, many lifetimes of material activity, of material consciousness. And as you know, old habits die hard. So it is not likely that all these things are going to be destroyed only in a matter of a few months or a few years. As we saw last time when I read out from chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains sequentially how the process of yoga or devotional service takes many lifetimes. And spontaneously we arise to that level of Krishna consciousness that we left in the previous life. So there is still some backlog of bad karma that is still there in us, the sinful propensity, some bad character, some anarthas that are still lurking in the heart. So because of that, it is possible that we may become deviated and we may fall prey to these wrong tendencies, to these sinful propensities. And because of that, sometimes we may get overwhelmed and we may get deviated. So such a deviation from the spiritual path is called a fall down. So fall down means when one is engaged in devotional service, but somehow one commits an action that is grossly contrary to the principles of bhakti, to devotional service. In other words, one performs some activity of gross sense gratification. So that is called a fall down. So we see that unless one is properly fixed up in devotional service, it is very likely that one will fall down. It is not surprising, because after all, when we come to bhakti or Krishna consciousness, we have, as it were, declared a war on Maya. Maya is the material energy of the Lord. And if you are to become Krishna conscious, you have to defeat this Maya. It's a battle. Until we become strong enough to tackle this battle on our own, it is likely that sometimes we may get injured in this battle. And sometimes we may fall down. It is likely. In the scripture, there are so many such instances. Right? But we will deal with such instances even more, perhaps in future classes. So it is not surprising if somebody who comes onto the path of Krishna consciousness falls down. In fact, in the early days of the Krishna consciousness movement, when Srila Prabhupada went to the western countries, and those people were completely unacquainted with spiritual knowledge, at least in this life. In previous lives, of course, they were acquainted. But in this life, they were unacquainted. So everything was very new to them. And because they were brought up in such a materialistic culture, so sinful habits was second nature to them. illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, gambling, all these activities were very natural to them. So happened that many devotees, or some devotees, started living in due course of time. And some devotees went to Srila Prabhupada and they told him that, how is it possible? It is so surprising that people are living this Krishna consciousness. How is it possible? So Prabhupada replied, what is surprising is not that devotees are living, but what is surprising is that people are staying. Because Maya is so strong in this world. If somebody is staying on in Krishna consciousness, following all the principles very strictly with great determination and great faith, he is to be considered a great soul, a Mahatma, a Sadhu. Because in spite of all odds, in spite of all the obstacles and temptations, distractions, difficulties in this world, still he is going on and on and on. So such a person is to be considered a Sadhu. So you must know that very few people are ultimately going to stay on. And this is a fact. And in course of time we see, some people last for 1 month, some people for 2 months, some people 6 years, some people 20 years. But eventually they fall away. But even if they fall away, we have known last time that that fall down is never permanent. You see, the sins that we have committed, they can never be a permanent block in our path to God. Why? Because sinful actions or sinful reactions, what will they do? They will only present unfavorable circumstances to us. They will give us some pain, they will give us some difficulty, and then they will perish. It's like a seed that is planted in the soil, it grows, it gives some fruit, and the fruit falls down and then it's finished. So just like punya, pap is also temporary in its effect. So pap and punya can never be permanent. So even if you have sinful reactions that are still there in the heart, if one is continuing on with our Krishna consciousness, then the seeds of all these sinful desires and sinful propensities will be burnt to the root. They will be destroyed. And then one can become properly situated. Ananya bhak, bhajate mam ananya bhak. So till we reach that platform of bhajate mam ananya bhak, it is likely that we have less faith. Sometimes we get shaken in our faith. Sometimes we get distracted when somebody comes and gives us all kinds of arguments. Then we may get a little disturbed in our faith. But that is natural. So in these situations, we should simply take shelter of the devotees. Come to satsang, take shelter of the books, take shelter of the holy name. And then again we will become samyag vyavasito hisaha. The disturbances come, but we should learn to tolerate them and simply go on. And if we do that, and if we are properly situated, samyag vyavasito hisaha, by always unflinchingly engaging in devotional service to Krishna, Krishna says, then you will be called a sadhu. Of course, we should not think, I have been doing bhakti for so many years, so I can pat my back and say, now I am a sadhu. No. A devotee will never think himself a sadhu. A devotee always thinks lowly of himself and he thinks high of others. So we should never think that I am unflinchingly engaged in devotional service. We should always realize, not only think, but we should realize how hard our struggle is and how much we have to struggle. Because it is not only the neophyte or the new devotee who has to struggle. The more advanced you become, the more stringent the tests become. Maya tests you more and more the more you advance. Just like in the first standard, there are tests, and also in the 10th standard, there are tests. The 10th standard test is far more difficult than the first standard test, isn't it? For one who is in the first standard, he will not be given the examination of SSC. And similarly, one who is in the 10th standard, he is also subject to examination, but not the first standard examination. So he also has to struggle. He also has to be vigilant. He has to beware. He should not think that because I am in the 10th standard, so everything is alright. No. Because the tests will also get stiffer and stiffer and stiffer. So at every stage in our Krishna consciousness, there is always a struggle. So long as we are within this material world, struggle is the name of the game. But the point is, what are you struggling for? The materialists are also struggling, the devotees are also struggling. But because the devotees are rightly situated, samyag vyavasita hisaha, therefore Lord Krishna guarantees that success will eventually be his. This is his assurance, that simply carry on. Just go on doing a devotional service day after day after day. Every day will present new problems, will present new difficulties. Maya will come up with new tricks to distract you from your spiritual life. But we should be determined. Simply go on. And then this is Lord Krishna's promise. Sadhur eva samantavyaha. So this shloka is a warning to the non-devotees. That don't think because some devotee who is unflinchingly engaged in devotional service, if he commits a mistake, don't think that he is a fallen person. Because he is always engaged in Krishna's service, understand him to be a sadhu. But then the warning, we should know what is the test if a person is sadhu or not. Number one, he should continue on in his devotional service. That's the first thing. Even after he has experienced the difficulty or the deviation from his spiritual life, he should continue on without ceasing. That's the first test. And second test is that that deviation should be accidental. Very important. It should not be pre-planned. And it should not be meditated upon in advance and planned in advance. That I will do this particular sinful activity and Lord Krishna has said that if I again chant the holy name or do bhakti, then I will be called a sadhu. No. It should be accidental by force of our past sinful actions, our material conditioning. Only in such a situation, with these two conditions, number one, in spite of the fall down, if one is properly fixed and continues on with great determination in our spiritual endeavor, and number two, that fall down or deviation is accidental and one is somehow or the other overwhelmed. Only in that situation does this verse apply. So we should never try to misunderstand this verse and think that I can do anything and still be called a devotee. A devotee should be always very careful of his conduct, of his moral life, of his moral conduct. He should be very vigilant to see that he doesn't violate the basic regulative principles that have been prescribed by the Lord. If he lives such a life, then success is guaranteed. So this is the important thing. In the next shloka, Lord Krishna is saying, what happens to such a person who has somehow or the other become deviated from spiritual life? Lord Krishna says, Kshipram bhavati dharmatma shashvam chantim nigachati. He says, Kshipram, very soon bhavati, he becomes what? Dharma atma. He becomes a righteous person. Arjuna, don't worry. Even if you have fallen down, even if you fall down from your spiritual life, if you simply continue on in your bhakti, then very soon, kshipram, you will become a righteous soul. And you will attain shashvat shantim. You will attain eternal and lasting peace. It is only a matter of time. But just go on. This is what Lord Krishna is saying here. So, in due course, we all become dharmatma. So we should never misunderstand the position of a sadhu in this way. A sadhu is one who is always serving Krishna. This is the understanding. And in case we feel about such a person, oh, this person is a devotee, but he has such a bad temperament. He sometimes gets angry. He is like this and he is like that. But so we may think that even though this person is a devotee of Krishna, but still he may be a sadhu, but he is not a 100% sadhu. So Krishna says, no. If he is engaged in Krishna's service always, he is a 100% sadhu. Even if he has certain defects, don't misunderstand. Don't see from the material viewpoint. Understand, accept him with all his defects and understand that he is still a sadhu. But as far as we are concerned, when we see those defects in ourselves, or when someone points out those defects in ourselves, we should take that to mean that actually we are so fallen. And we should try to take the corrective measures to get rid of those faults. But nevertheless, we should know, we should not get depressed or frustrated. We should still be enthusiastic because of Lord Krishna's promise that soon, very soon, kshipram, we will attain lasting peace and we will become righteous. And then there will be no question of a fall down. And then comes Lord Krishna's ringing promise. What is that? It's very famous. Please memorize these two lines. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhaktaha pranashyati. His clarion call is echoing down the ages now, coming down, reminding us, O son of Kunti, never fear, my devotee will never perish. Go out and declare boldly, Arjuna. He says, Pratijanihi. You go and declare, Arjuna, that my devotee will never perish. So this is Lord Krishna's assurance. Now what does Lord Krishna say by pranashyati, he will never perish? That we will see a little later. But let us dwell for a while upon why Krishna is asking Arjuna to declare that his devotee will never perish. Why doesn't he declare it himself in this shloka? There is a reason. Because Krishna loves his devotee so much, he is so indebted to his devotee, that he values his devotee's word more than his own word. He is willing to keep his devotee's promise at any cost. But if the need arises in an emergency, he may even violate his own promise. This is the glory of Krishna. This is the extent to which he may actually go for the sake of protecting his devotee. Isn't it? We are very conscious of our reputation. Oh, what will happen if I break my word? What will other people think of me? But Lord Krishna says, for the sake of my devotee, I am even willing to be called an immoral person, if that is helpful to my devotee. So there is a wonderful story from the Mahabharata in this regard. As you know, the Mahabharata was fought between the Kauravas and the Pandavas. And Arjuna had asked for Krishna to be on his side, and Duryodhana had asked for Krishna's army. And Arjuna said, I don't want anything more than you. If you are on my side, I am happy. I know victory will be ours. And at that time, Duryodhana, at the beginning of the battle of Kurukshetra, some days had already, the battle had already been fought for a couple of days, and there was no result. The Pandavas were somehow emerging more and more stronger. So in his frustration, Duryodhana went up to Bhishma, and he told him, my dear grandfather, you are the greatest Maharathi, the greatest warrior on this battlefield. And that was true. There was no greater warrior than Bhishma. Actually, although Bhishma on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was an old man, still he was so powerful that he could single-handedly have defeated all the Pandavas. He was so powerful. This was the power of Bhishma. Yet, somehow or the other, Bhishma was unable to penetrate the defenses of the Pandavas. Naturally, because Krishna was present. But Duryodhana didn't understand that. So Duryodhana accused Bhishma. He said, these are your pet grandnephews. They are your favorites. Therefore you are being partial. You are being unfaithful. You are fighting on the side of the Kauravas, but because of your soft corner for Arjuna and the Pandavas, therefore you are not actually fighting to your utmost. So Bhishma was a Kshatriya, a very powerful Kshatriya. And these words stung him more like as if there were 1,000 bees stinging him. And smarting under this insult, he took a vow. He said in front of Duryodhana, I take a vow in front of you, in front of all the assembled Kauravas, that tomorrow all these 5 Pandavas shall be slain at my hands. And these are the 5 arrows with which I shall slay them. This is a vow I take. For a Kshatriya, dishonor is worse than death. And nothing is worse than being unable to keep a vow. You are completely disgraced. So therefore, Bhishma, everyone knew, yes, now the Pandavas are finished. There is no hope for Arjuna and the Pandavas. So they were very confident. Because in Bhishma, as you know, how did Bhishma get the name? The one who has taken the terrible vow, isn't it? When his father, Shantanu, wanted to marry Satyavati, then Satyavati's father came and said, I will give her on the condition that her son becomes the king. But the only way the guarantee will be there is if you don't marry. And then Bhishma took a vow. Although he was a Kshatriya, he took a vow of lifelong celibacy. You see, for a Kshatriya who is situated in the mode of passion, to take a vow of celibacy, especially in those days, was very, very difficult. A Brahmana could take a vow of celibacy and it was all right, considered normal. But for a Kshatriya to take a vow of celibacy in the prime youth, was considered very, very difficult. So Bhishma took that vow. So people knew, all the Kauravas knew that if Bhishma is taking this vow, then there is no question of failure. So the Pandavas are definitely going to be destroyed. So there was great jubilation in the Kaurava camp. Krishna is Paramatma. He is situated in everyone's heart. So immediately he understood what plan Bhishma had. So Krishna also is a supreme politician. So he called Arjuna and said, Arjuna, I want you to do something. Do you remember that some time back Duryodhana had asked you for a boon, that whatever you desire I will fulfill? So now is the time. You go to Duryodhana. Duryodhana has taken very intelligently all those 5 arrows from Bhishma, lest Bhishma should change his mind. He has taken those five arrows for safekeeping, and Duryodhana has those arrows with him. So you go to Duryodhana now, after the day of battle is over, and you ask him, remind him of this favor that he has given you, and you ask for those five arrows. You see, the custom in those days was that even a battle was fought according to certain principles. Today there is no question of principles, either in love or in war. But in those days, there was principles even in war. In war, from sunrise to sunset, the battle would take place, and as soon as there was sunset, the battle would stop, and the two sides would become friends. Not only would they become friends, they would intermingle in each other's camp. And when the enemy, one warrior would visit the enemy camp, he would be received very warmly, just like he was a very honored guest. And then he was sent back with all kinds of refreshments and honor. And next morning, they would be ready to kill each other. That was the custom. So at the end of the day's battle, Arjuna went to the camp of the Kauravas. And Duryodhana welcomed him and said, Arjuna, what do you want? Do you want me to stop this battle? So Arjuna was also a Kshatriya. How can he ask for stopping the battle? He says, no, I don't want to stop the battle, but I want those five arrows from you. Immediately Duryodhana, it was as if there was a heart attack. But then somehow, because he had given his word and he was a Kshatriya, so immediately, without hesitation, he came and gave those five arrows. And Bhishma heard of it. And Bhishma said, this Krishna, now Krishna is responsible for this. Nobody else could have thought of this. Only Krishna. Therefore he took a vow. He said, Krishna, you have made me break my vow, because with these five arrows gone, I will not be able to kill. And you will come in the way of my killing these five Pandavas. So because you will make me break my vow, therefore I promise I take another vow. What is that vow? That I will make you break your vow. And what was Krishna's vow? Krishna had taken a vow at the beginning of the battle. You see, he told them, the Kauravas and the Pandavas, that both of you are my cousins, my brothers. So how can I be partial? Therefore, I will not take any sides. Because you have chosen, I have given you the choice of myself and my army. Arjuna has chosen me, so I am on the side of the Pandavas. And Duryodhana has chosen the army, so the army will be on the side of the Kauravas. But yet, I will not fight. I will not lift a weapon. So Arjuna said, okay, then you can become my charioteer, my sarathi. So Krishna said, alright, but mind you, my word is that I will not lift a weapon to fight. I will not fight. I will only ride your chariot. So this was Krishna's vow. So Bhishma took a terrible vow again. He said, now I will take another vow to make sure that Krishna fights. So next day when the battle began, even without those five arrows, Bhishma fought so ferociously, so fiercely, that nobody had ever seen Bhishma fighting so hard even in the prime of his youth. And then Arjuna was completely at sixes and sevens. And in short while, Arjuna's bow was on one side, his arrows on the other side, and soon the wheel of his chariot was thrown off and his chariot capsized. And when the chariot capsized, Arjuna also fell down from the chariot. And then Arjuna was actually a sitting duck for Bhishma to shoot. But as you know, a Kshatriya doesn't shoot somebody who is without a weapon and who has fallen down. So at that time, Krishna, he was so angry that he lifted up the wheel of the chariot personally and he advanced towards Bhishma with great anger, and he was about to throw this wheel towards him, the chariot wheel. And at that time, Bhishma, he raised his hand and said, yes, Krishna, now you may kill me. Because you know, Bhishma, although he was on the side of the Kauravas, he was actually a great devotee of the Lord. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a description that there are 12 great Mahajans. Mahajan, great personalities, who are authorities in the path of bhakti. And Bhishma is amongst them. How Bhishma fought on the side of the Kauravas, in spite of being a great devotee, is another story. Some other time we may discuss. But this was also actually Krishna's will. So he was actually only fulfilling Krishna's will to be on the side of the Kauravas. So anyway, Krishna came and then he said, okay Krishna, now I am yours, you can do as you like. So in this way we can see that Krishna broke his own promise simply to save Arjuna. So Krishna, then later on all through, everyone says Krishna broke this promise, just see, he took a vow and he didn't fulfill it. Krishna says, I don't care. Because Arjuna, my devotee, was in danger and my priority is to save my devotees. Never mind what people think of me. So therefore, when Lord Krishna is promising here that don't worry, you will never perish, people may doubt that, see, Krishna broke his word on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He had promised that he will never lift a weapon, but he broke his thing. He broke his vow, therefore he may break his promise here also. What is the guarantee? Krishna says that my devotee will never perish, but what if Krishna changes his mind? So Krishna says, Arjuna, you say it. Because they, everyone knows that my devotee's word I will never break. Because I value my devotee more than myself. So therefore Krishna says, Prati janihi. Kaunteya, O Arjuna, you declare that my devotee will never perish. I will not declare. I have already declared enough. But still people may doubt. So now, you say that. Declare it boldly. Not just declare, but declare it boldly. Go out.
Pranashyati. So what is this pranashyati? Pranashyati means destroyed. So Krishna says my devotee will never be destroyed. But what does it mean to not destroy? Is Krishna talking about the protection of this material body? This material body is bound to perish sooner or later. Whether you are a devotee or a non-devotee, ultimately we all have to die. The only difference is what happens after death. One who becomes a pure devotee goes back to the kingdom of God. One who is a materialist, he has to take birth again in different species of life according to his karma. And one who is in between, whose spiritual life is not yet completed, he also has to take birth according to the formulae that we spoke about last Wednesday. So the death is there for everyone. So the material body must perish. So Krishna will not make such a promise that he will protect your body unlimitedly. Of course, he also does that sometimes. But he will not do it eternally. Can you mention some instances when he also protects the body? This very instance, when to protect Krishna's devotee Arjuna, to protect Arjuna's body, he actually broke his vow. So he protected Arjuna's body. So many times he protected the Pandavas. When they were in the Lakshagraha, the house of lakh, he protected them. So many situations. On the battlefield, the Pandavas were victorious only because of Krishna. Otherwise they would have been destroyed. At the end of the Mahabharata, when the war was over, and Arjuna and Krishna were to get down from the chariot, and it was customary for Arjuna, because he was so grateful to Krishna, as a matter of etiquette, he told Krishna, that Krishna, you please depart, you please get down first. Because when you respect somebody, you tell them, please, you go first. So he told Krishna, you please get down from the chariot first. So what did Krishna say? Pehle aap. He said, no, first you get down, first. So this went on for some time. But then they said, ultimately Arjuna got down. And then when Krishna got down, what happened? The whole chariot crumbled into dust. What did it mean? What was the meaning of this? Yes, actually, left to itself, if Krishna was not there, the chariot was actually destroyed a long time back. But simply because Krishna was on the chariot, therefore everything was in order. So when Krishna got down from the chariot, everything came back to what it should have been. So in this way we can see that Krishna also physically protected his devotees. Any other instances where Krishna has physically protected the body of the devotees? Can you think of anything? Yes? Ambarish Maharaj. What is the story of Ambarish Maharaj? Ambarish was a great king. He was a great devotee of the Lord. This is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And one time, the great mystic yogi Durvasa Muni came. And Durvasa Muni is very notorious for his, for what? His temper, his vicious temper. At the least provocation, he loses his temper. And not only that, he gives such a curse that, you know, so everyone is very afraid of Durvasa Muni because he curses you. So because he is an incarnation of Shiva actually. And Shiva is known as Ashutosh, who gets pleased very fast and who gets angry very fast. So Durvasa Muni, because he is his Anshavatar, therefore he was also like that. So there's a long story, but somehow when Durvasa Muni became angry with Ambarish Maharaj, he let loose a fiery demon who was about to devour Ambarish. But Krishna saved him. And actually, with his Sudarshan Chakra, he began chasing Durvasa Muni all through the universe. And it was only when Lord Narayan himself said that unless you beg forgiveness from Amrish Maharaj, till then my Sudarshan Chakra will not leave you. And it was only then that the Sudarshan Chakra actually left. Amrish Maharaj, being a devotee, of course, was very humble and he didn't feel himself fit to be in a position to forgive. He said, what do I have to forgive? I am so fallen myself. But nevertheless, this is an important example of how Krishna protected his devotee. Any other example? Yes? Yes, the most famous example of them all, Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu tried so many ways to kill his son. But he emerged victorious, unscathed. Not a single hair on his body was burnt or injured, even when he was thrown into the fire. So therefore, there is a saying, Rakhe Krishna Mare Ke, Mare Krishna Rakhe Ke. If Krishna wants to kill, who can save you? And if Krishna wants to save you, who can kill you? So if you are destined to die according to your karma, you can slip and die in your bathroom. And if you are destined not to die, even if there is an aeroplane crash, you may be the only survivor in 300. So ultimately Krishna is in control. So in this way Krishna protects the body also. But more importantly, Lord Krishna is not speaking about bodily protection. He is speaking about the protection of your spiritual consciousness, of your bhakti. That is what Krishna wants to protect. And that is what he promises here. That don't worry, somehow or the other, even if you get deviated and distracted from this path, even if you fall down, even if you die, even death cannot interrupt your spiritual consciousness, because in the next life or very soon, I will come and bring back your bhakti. I will remind you. Do you remember last Wednesday we were discussing that all your spiritual activity that you do is eternal. It is accumulating in a bank account. And that bank is not like State Bank of India or Union Bank of India. That bank is a bank in which your balance is eternally building up. And that bank will never get destroyed, that bank balance. It will always remain with you life after life. And this bank will never fail. So even if somehow you get deviated, Lord Krishna says that account will always stand to your credit. And sooner or later, you will come back. So, we can understand the process of falling down from spiritual life as losing your checkbook. You remember the analogy of this bank account. Now one more analogy I will give you. You know, when you operate your bank account, you have a checkbook. Suppose you lose your checkbook, what happens? You can't operate the account, can you? If you are at a distant place. Of course, if you are in the local city, you may go to the manager and take a withdrawal slip or get a new checkbook or something. But if you are out of town, you are away, then you are handicapped because you don't have the checkbook. So till you find the checkbook, although your money is there, it is your money, it is safe and sound, but you can't use that checkbook. Correct? Similarly, even though you have done Krishna conscious activity, you have performed spiritual activity, but if you fall away, then for the duration when you have forgotten your spiritual life and you have forgotten Krishna, it is as if you have lost your checkbook. Krishna is not only protecting your bank account, he is not only maintaining that, but he is also saying that I will come and return your checkbook to you. Don't worry. I will make sure that you find it. So what more can we want? So you are searching, sometimes it happens, you may lose your checkbook and then you search your drawers, you search your cupboards and ultimately you find it. Yes, I found it. So similarly, Krishna says, sooner or later, Kshipram, I will actually return your checkbook to you. Krishna is very merciful. So he is always looking for an excuse to return our checkbook to us. But every time he returns the checkbook through various personalities and various media, we are forgetful. So we say, oh, this checkbook, no, this is not my checkbook. So at various times, we have people coming to tell us, please come to Krishna consciousness, chant the holy name. Why didn't you come to Bhagavad Gita lecture? Why didn't you come for satsang? Oh, no, I have some other work. So Krishna is returning our checkbook to us through the medium of so many people, but we think, oh, this is not my checkbook. It's not my checkbook. So finally, Krishna has to tweak our ear. He has to twist the ear so hard that in pain we accept, yes, I accept, it is my checkbook. What does it mean? It means that by the force of Maya, we are put into so much distress that simply in distress we cry out to Krishna, now I will come and surrender to Krishna, I have had enough. So therefore Krishna's warning, it's also like a covered warning, that don't come to such a stage of forgetfulness that Krishna is forced to give you a loving tweak on the ear. When your child misbehaves, out of love sometimes you tweak his ear. But for the child it is very painful and he cries out. But for you it is a sign of love, because you know if you don't scold him, then he will continue with his mischief. So similarly, out of his love, Krishna sometimes may have to lovingly tweak our ear to give us that checkbook. Come on, you take that checkbook and you withdraw from your account now. And not only that, this account, the more you withdraw, the more it increases. Such a bank account I'm giving you, and you're not taking use of this checkbook, so take it. Krishna tweaks the checkbook. So Krishna is always after us. Once you have accepted Krishna consciousness, then you are doomed. What is doomed? Your material life is doomed. Because eventually Krishna will tweak your ear and make you a devotee. In this Hare Krishna movement, once there was a devotee in the Western countries. Somehow or the other, he became a little disillusioned with spiritual life. And then he decided that this is too much for me to take. All these regulative principles, all these do's and don'ts, all this hard work, getting up early in the morning, it's too much for me to take. I have taken up to a point and now I must give it up. I can't take it. So after a few years he left. And he decided, I am so angry with all these devotees, I never want to see them again in the rest of my life. So somehow Krishna had other plans. You see, man proposes, God disposes. So his plan was that he wanted to have nothing to do with the other devotees. So he decided, I will not stay in the same city. I will go to another city. So he took a plane. When he sat in the plane, whom did he see next to him? There was a devotee. So he looked the other way. He had changed his clothes, he had grown his hair, he had wearing shirt and pant and he was everything. He looked the other way, but his devotee was chanting, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. So he was forced to hear. And the plane was full, so he couldn't even go to another seat and sit down. So anyway, somehow he tried to close his ears, but sound was still penetrating. Then he got down at the airport, and when he got down to the airport, he saw some book distributors there coming with books, and they came up to him. Sir, would you like to read Bhagavad Gita? He said, no, I don't want to read Bhagavad Gita. Get out of my sight. Don't come near me. So there also the devotees came. Krishna was sending again, again, again. Then he decided, now I want to go and see a picture. All the devotees told me you should never see cinema. Now, just to spite them, I will go and see a cinema. So he went into the cinema theater. And in the cinema theater, there was a picture of devotees going on Nagar Sankirtan. So he said, this is too much. He went back, he got out of the movie theater, and in this way, day after day after day, somehow or the other, there was something to remind him of his devotional life. And then he understood. Krishna is sending me too many signals. And intelligence prevailed, and he went back and joined the same temple. So we can see that even if you deviate, Krishna is always waiting. Krishna is always eager that we should come back to spiritual life. So all the time he's reminding us through so many different people, through so many different agencies, through the books. And there are various wonderful ways in which Krishna can remind us and bring us to Krishna consciousness. There is another wonderful story of how somebody else was reminded of his old previous devotional life. You see, he was eating a watermelon. I may have narrated this story before. There's one man, he was eating a slice of a watermelon and going on very happily on the street. And while he was absorbed in eating this watermelon, somehow or the other, the watermelon slipped from his hand. And it fell right next to him, there was a garbage bin, and it fell into the garbage bin. So having tasted the watermelon, which is very sweet, he didn't want to let go. So he put his hands into the garbage bin to pick up that watermelon, because he still wanted to eat it, because he had just tasted it. So as he rummaged through the garbage, then immediately he got something and he picked it up. And what was it? A Bhagavad Gita, which somebody else had thrown. You know, people go on the street to distribute books. So somebody, some devotee must have been very forceful with someone, and somehow or the other persuaded that person against his will to take a Bhagavad Gita. So just to get him off his back, he may have taken that copy and then thrown it in the waste paper basket. And then this man comes along, searching for his watermelon, and he got this Bhagavad Gita. He opened this. What is this Bhagavad Gita? He started reading it. And within a short while, he dedicated his whole life to Krishna. And he is still in the movement, going strong. So we can see that Krishna is always there to remind us of what we did in our previous life, of what we did even in this life. Many of us, perhaps, we have had, due to our upbringing, devotional sanskaras from our childhood. But somehow when we grow up, we come into the company of our friends in college and school, and we go out in professional life and so on, then we forget. And it becomes fashionable these days to forget God, or to become very materialistic. So, in this so-called fashionable, so-called modernized and westernized environment, we are all forgetting our culture. But Krishna sometimes doesn't allow us to forget. So he will remind us somehow or the other. And that is why in Bharatvarsha, it is very advantageous to take birth here. Because we have the sanskaras. So it is easier for us to come back to Krishna consciousness. It is very easy for us to come back to the spiritual path. Because our reminder, our past devotional services are in this life itself. So it is easier compared to the previous life. So just see how fortunate we are being born in this land of Bharatvarsha. Therefore we have a great responsibility on our shoulders. Lord Chaitanya, who is Lord Krishna himself, who incarnated about 500 years ago, he says, Bharata bhumite janma hoilo jar, janma sarthak kori, karo para upakar. Amar agyay hoye guru taro ei desh. Amar agyay, what is that shloka? Amar agyay guru hoye taro ei desh. Taro means to swim them across the whole ocean of material existence. So he says, Bharata bhumite janma hoilo jar. Whoever has taken birth in Bharatvarsha, what about him? Janma sarthak kori. You have to make your life perfect. Kori para upakar. You not only make your life perfect, but help to make other people's life perfect. That is the twin responsibility of being born in Bharatvarsha. First of all, become a perfect devotee yourself, and then help others becoming a perfect devotee. And then, Amar agyay guru hoye taro ei desh. He says, on my instruction, you become guru and go out and preach. Jare dekho, tare kaho, Krishna upadesh. Amar agyay guru hoye taro ei desh. So whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. Tell them about Krishna's message. This is the responsibility of being born in Bharatvarsha. So we should realize the important benefit, the great benefit that we have got simply by being born in this land. To have a human body is a great advantage. Because only in the human body we can do bhakti. To get a human body in Bharatvarsha is an even greater benefit. To get a human body in Bharatvarsha and then to get facility of satsang is an even greater benefit. And one who has all these three but still doesn't take to the process of bhakti seriously is indeed very, very unfortunate. So let us take with full enthusiasm to this process of Krishna consciousness simply by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And then very easily we can make our life perfect. Hare Krishna.